Hey, good morning, everyone. So I was away last week. It's amazing how you miss being a part of something like this that brings you to that place of kind of a stop in your week where you just kind of can reflect and be present and in the moment and be challenged. So I downloaded the podcast. How many were here last week? Can I just say, if you missed it, you need to go online and you need to listen to that message. Jerry Smiley was here and interviewed by Vince. Oh man, I gotta tell you, that shook me to the core. Got me thinking hard. Thank you, Jerry, for sharing your story last week. It was fantastic, fantastic. We got such a great summer lined up. Next week, Luke and Chad, musicians and members of our own community here, I'm going to be interviewing them in a part of our ongoing series, Love Your Neighbor series, and they're going to speak on the whole topic of addiction, both of them coming through an incredible story, and so you won't want to miss that as well. I'm really excited about this morning. Good friend of mine gets to speak, and I get to listen. But he's been a friend of Friends Church since the very inception. We're talking about that this morning. Friends Church is coming up to its 20th anniversary. Did you know that? We launched this in 97, and we're just a number of families coming together. And one of the things we did as we started getting together with a few of the different people that really were excited about something we had in mind, this thing called Friends Church, we started coming together in homes and just talking through what could this thing be. And so Tom came over at the time. He was pastoring another church in town, came over and just sat with us and challenged us to think hard about the kind of community we wanted to be. And remember, some of those early sessions were formative. Since that time, we've golfed a lot, and we've told a lot of stories. We've gone through a lot of life together, and I have an incredible level of trust and respect with Tom. And so I want you to put your hands together and welcome Tom as he comes this morning. Tom, as you're coming, getting set. I don't know what all you have to do to get set here. But so what we're going to do is, and I love this idea. In fact, if it goes well, Tom, I might actually just start doing it. Mm-hmm. But Tom wants to speak for 20 or 25 minutes and then wants to engage in a little bit of dialogue with all of you. So questions, thoughts, feedback. So allow for about a 10-minute kind of Q&A, kind of conversation, you wanted me to say.
Q&R.
Q, question and response.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're not focusing on answers. We're focusing on responses.
Right.
So anyways, that's what we're going to do. So as you're listening this morning, come up with your questions or responses, and we'll just have a great time afterwards, too.
Cool.
Good. Let me get out of your way.
Thanks, Jeff. Awesome. Good morning, everyone. You all doing good? Who's cheering for France this afternoon? Who's cheering for Portugal?
Yeah.
Who doesn't care? Jeff, this congregation needs to be mentored in the beautiful game. The beautiful game of soccer, yeah. I was supporting England, and we went out to Iceland, which has a population of 3 people, and we got beat badly, so it was a disaster Euros. A little while ago, I had a conversation with a friend of mine over breakfast, and he was a member of a what I would call fairly traditional, fundamental type of faith community, and he was concerned about my spiritual journey. He had felt that I had kind of drifted from the fold, as it were. And we spent most of the morning of him trying to convince me that I was wrong, which didn't feel particularly good in the course of breakfast. And here's my emotional response to the conversation was one where I began to emotionally disconnect and then distance myself from the conversation and from the relationship. And I thought about it afterwards, and I thought, you know, it's interesting because I think that's really what's happened for a lot of culture today around faith. is that there's been this emotional disconnection where we're tired of being told that we're wrong. We're tired of being told what's black and what's white. And we're exhausted from trying to fit into a very narrow perspective of what faith and ultimately Christianity becomes. I was thinking about it afterwards. I thought, you know what? It's almost like we go to a restaurant and we read the menu, and then we start eating the menu thinking that that's dinner. And I think that's an awful lot of what Christianity has become. Like, we're just mowing down on menus, but we actually never get to the meal. We're missing the point, and we're missing it so badly, but yet we think we're right. Because the menu, even though it doesn't taste particularly good, we think that that's like, it's the word, right? We got to get it right, and we're going to eat this thing. And you know, and by eating it, we are then also, you know, forcing other people to do the same. So today I want to unpack a little bit of some of my meanderings around what I would call spirituality. And there are certain words that I take an aversion to, and spirituality is one of them at the moment, because everybody is now no longer, when you say what faith are you, they say I'm spiritual but not religious. Right? Have you, anybody heard that? Okay, I'm spiritual but not religious. And I thought, what do you mean by that? You know, and if you ask someone what they mean by that, the conversation usually ends at that particular point. They're basically saying, I don't want to eat menus, I'm done with that, but I don't really know what's next. And so I want to open up a conversation this morning around a couple of aspects of what I want to call authentic spirituality. And that's not a pejorative sense in terms of defining spirituality, but starting to understand the context of being, how we are to be in our spiritual journey. To begin with, let me create a distinction between two words. And the two words, and I've said this here before, so for those of you that have heard this before, I don't apologize, because I know repetition is a good instructor. But the two words are, the one is change, which I think we're told to do a lot of when we're in church. We're supposed to change stuff. And when we change things, right, and I want to kind of make a distinction between the idea of change and transformation. Change is really defined by doing things better, doing things differently, you know, doing it more, you know, so it's more, better, different. And interestingly, the more and the better and the different is always about changing something that already exists, and then bringing that into our present conversation. So in other words, we're bringing the past into the present, and we look through to the future through the past. And when you look to the future through the past, you end up creating an almost certain predictable future which looks just like the past. And we repeat over and over. One of my clients was the domestic violence unit up in Red Deer. And here's an interesting stat for you. If you are a victim of or a witness to domestic violence before the age of 5, there is an 85% chance that you will be a perpetrator or a victim of domestic violence as an adult. 85%. In other words, what we do is we know that, because we use the word normal. Yeah, you ever heard that? I'm just normal. Normal is a cycle in a washing machine, and that's all it is. Okay, because your family of origin was your family of origin, and for you, that's normal. As abusive or as dysfunctional as it may be, that's yours, right? And for the rest of our lives, we're going through this kind of therapeutic process trying to offload that and then trying to change it. And so this morning, let's contrast the idea of change. So this would be a relief, wouldn't it? If somebody stood up here and said, okay, you don't have to change anymore. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm not asking you to change anything. If you're smoking, smoke your brains out. Go knock yourself out. You know, like, you don't have to change a thing. Like, all of the you know, the pharisaical lists of things that we're supposed to change so we fit. Stop trying to change, all right? And instead of that, let's talk about transformation. And transformation, I think, is what Jesus talked about. Jesus shows up and he talks about a shift in being. And he would say things, really provocative things like this. You've heard it said, but I say. And so here's the rule, here's the law. But here's an idea. And maybe the idea that Jesus talked about was shifting, not just about more than, better than, different from, because he never said that. He always talked about being, right? You need to be born again. So the actual Greek phrase there is to be being born again. So it's something that happens on an ongoing basis, that we're always in this process of becoming. And we are human beings, right? And so that sense of being, when we are transformed, right? It's about being and about possibilities. What possibilities do we create when we're not trying to change something? If we can get to a place where the past is complete, we do have an obligation to the past, by the way, and that is to complete it, right? And so once the past is complete, and now we've got this kind of blank slate, what's possible once we get to this place, the things are complete? Well, anything's possible. So now we're creating possibilities. And I like the phrase Richard Rohr uses it in the title of one of his books. He talks about falling upward. And there's this, once you've completed the first half of life, you can fall upward. And when you do, it's really cool. So that's my invitation this morning, is fall upward and let's start becoming into this new space. Right, this new space of being. Let me read something to you that was, call it a coincidence, but I got this kind of popped up, and I think it's brilliant. Anybody here ever gone to, not that you're going to admit it here, but anybody here ever gone to therapy? Okay, so I've spent millions on therapy. First 10 years was dealing with mom, the next 10 years dealing with my own stuff, you know. Some of you, it was dad, you know. My dad was okay. My mom needed some therapy. they're both dead now, so I can talk nicely about them. Both therapy and spirituality have an important place in full life. Much therapy today is a needed way of dealing with our psychological problems, but eventually we must move from exclusively trying to solve our problems to knowing that we can never fully resolve them, but only learn from them. Sometimes we can only forgive our imperfections and the neuroses and embrace them and even weep over them, which is not to hate them, by the way. Carl Jung says, the greatest and most important problems in life are in a certain sense insoluble. They must be so because they express the necessary polarity inherent in every self-regulating system. They can never be solved, only outgrown. So it's the idea of the shadow self, which is really, I like the idea of the small self, that there has to be an embracing of that. And unfortunately, what we've done is in Christianity anyway, we've kind of tried to get rid of that or deny that or pretend that it doesn't exist. I mean, a good question to ask yourself frequently is this: what am I pretending not to know? Right? Because there's that pretense and illusion that we get to. And you know, I like it when people say, I'm disillusioned. I'm really disillusioned with my faith. Good. You go, well, what do you mean, good? Well, you've just dissed the illusion. Right? You've let go of the illusion. And a lot of promises that are said, especially in Christianity, to get people to engage, really is false advertising. Right? I mean, if we're really honest about it, we wouldn't be, you know, promising all kinds of wild promises to get people to engage. We'd be more honest about the process that sometimes, as I love that song this morning, that sometimes we go to hell and sometimes we end up at heaven's gates, and it's like, and God's with you wherever you go. And that's the promise, that God's going to be with you through the muck and the mire and everything else, and he will help you and encourage you to fall upward. And so I think that spirituality, rather than being about black and white, right and wrong, authentic spirituality is really about doing that journey and staying fully engaged in that, and not finding convenient categories into which to put things. But we embrace the fullness of life. The other thing that I think is interesting around spirituality that we're called to, and I say that phrase, we're called to or led to, is that we let go of, especially early on, and how many of you can remember early on in your spiritual journey that things were really simple and really right and really wrong, and you were really certain? Remember those days? Oh, thank God for the certain days, you know, like we're dead right. You know, whether we were wrong or not was never, because the Bible said it, that settled it. And so it was a very naive form of faith. And as you let go of some of that, what we discover that rather than being a very kind of primary colored type of faith, which is sometimes how it appears, we now get this spectroscopic view of faith that has all pastels and all of the colors of possibility that begin to emerge. And things don't fit as nicely and easily into categories. And things aren't always about right and wrong and black and white, but then it becomes about questions, and you lose, because the ego wants to hang on to the sense of certainty. But as we lose that, we then enter into the idea of question and asking good questions. And I'm grateful to Jeff's introduction this morning to my friendship with Jeff, because he asked me some awkward questions early on in me falling upward. And I remember coming away from the first conversation, I don't think I've ever told you this, Jeff, but I came away from the first conversation with Jeff really angry, because the questions were really disturbing. And any of you have gone through kind of a disturbing question that's been asked, and you're going, okay, I don't like that question. I liked other questions. I like certainty more. And yet, at the same time, I couldn't disconnect from the questions. And so it pulls you into this amazing journey that you get pulled into. And I think that's very, very powerful. So we spirituality, one of the quotes that has driven my life over the last 10 years anyway, is Jean Vanier said, "We are not so much human beings seeking a spiritual experience." And oftentimes, if you look at how we have structured religion, we have done it around seekers, right? So there's been, do you remember the term seeker-sensitive? Any of you remember that term? Okay. So we create the seeker-oriented kind of faith because we our perception is that we're dead in our trespasses and sins, to quote a scripture. And so we're seeking life. We're seeking God. We are seekers. And so we create a context where people can come and seek. And then you enter, you become born again, or whatever the phrase is, and now you're spiritual. That's the context, right? And Vanier says we're not so much human beings seeking a spiritual experience. Rather, we are spiritual beings seeking a human experience. It's our humanity that we struggle with, not so much our spirituality. So here's the starting point for us. Try this shift. That you are already spiritual, all right? And what about this shift, this one? What if you start out knowing that right now you're complete, perfect, and whole? Look at yourself in the mirror in the morning and start your day out and go, I'm complete, I'm perfect, I'm whole. Rather than, I'm a sinner. Try starting your day out that way. Because here's the deal. If you've completed the past, you're complete. Right? And you're whole. Now, as a whole, whole, that you embrace all of you. And by being whole, that means that you understand that your shadow is part of who you are. And that you embrace that. That there are, as Jung says, there are parts of your shadow that are insoluble. They don't disappear. Just a couple of days ago, I was bugged by myself. You ever been irritated by yourself? You ever kind of like, oh man, I don't like me in certain aspects, right? And one of the tapes for me that runs in the conversation in my head, and we all have internal conversations. You're aware of that, right? You have this internal voice, call it the ego, the id, whatever. And those of you that don't think you have a voice, it's the voice in your head right now saying you don't have a voice in your head, because you have one. Some of you have an entire small group and a concert going up in here, and it's a conversation. And we get these tapes that oftentimes from this normal family that we were raised in, right? You ever hear your dad's voice or your mom's voice or some coach or teacher or some other voice that's playing? When I was growing up, my parents, my dad was a prophet at university and my mom was a nurse, and I was raised in the 60s where there was a fair bit of controversy around how to raise children, right? And my dad was on one side of that, my mother was on the other. And so they would often have very interesting and colorful arguments about how to raise me. Apparently, I wasn't a particularly easy child to raise. Who knew? So the arguments that they would have, often it would come out that those were about, child rearing. So when they got divorced, when I was about 12, it was a very short journey for me to go from something's wrong with the family here to it was my fault, right? And the it's my fault tape that there's something wrong, boy, that ran my life for a long time. And I remember having a conversation when I was in my 40s, and I was having this conversation. I said, something came up, and I said, I've always felt like that's my fault. And the person I was talking to said, that's a really young way of seeing that. I said, how young? They said, about 7. Oh, shit, man, I got a 7-year-old running my life. And when you're 40-something, it's really not a great idea to have a 7-year-old running your life, because 7-year-olds don't make quality decisions for 40-year-olds. And so there was this sense in which that had to shift. But once I became conscious of the tape, I was then able to have a sense of power over that so that I could make optimal choices for my life rather than being run by a 7-year-old. But a couple of days ago, I'm still conscious of that tape that runs. And I'm going, darn it, like here I am. I've known this, and gee, it's still there. And it's something wrong. Because that, in a sense, for all of us, that's the struggle in some way or another, that we all struggle. It's part of our humanity. We all struggle with not being enough. Right? I mean, you take down and dissolve and take a look at the struggles. I'm not tall enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not rich enough, I'm not good looking enough, I'm not skinny enough, and if you're skinny, I'm not fat enough, you're always not enough in some way. And if you've worked with elite athletes or you've worked with people that are models and you look at the neurosis that they deal with, they're not enough. Because most of them are photoshopped. Right? It's artificial. And so the commonality to us is we're not enough. And then we come along and in God, we find this wonderful divine presence that in that place of love, right, we find that we are complete. And we find that we are loved. That right now you are in God. And you are loved in God, and you're complete in that. Isn't that cool? You don't have to do more. You don't have to perform more. You don't have to give more. I thought that was really clever this morning, by the way. I surrender all right before the offering. I thought that was brilliant. I don't know if you designed that, but that was very good. But you can't give enough, right? Because right now, right in this moment, God is not out there somewhere. We're seeking God. That He is here in us and we are in Him, in God. And in that relationship, in that place, it's not dualism where it's right and wrong, black and white, out there, in here, us, them. It's now about oneness. It's about us being in God and God being in us. And that's our starting point. And if you know that you're loved and that right now you're enough, that sense of being, that's transformative. That has a power to it for all of our lives to know, in a sense, sin is disordered love. It's our misdirected way of trying to find that place of oneness. And our relationships take on a different hue if we recognize that in God we're complete. And God, we're loved. And then we get to then share that love with significant others and families and the family of faith. That we now find ways of because love has a way, that great line from Jurassic Park, life has a way of breaking out, you know that one? Love has a way of breaking out. Love by itself cannot stay alone. I've often wondered, you know, with all the pain and suffering that's in the world, why did God ever start this thing in the first place? My theory around that is that God was tired of having Christmas by himself. Right? Because where do you go at Christmas? Where do you go? You go home. We all go home. Even if it's Saskatchewan, you go home. Right? Because there's a part of you that wants to share life. Well, God, right? God wants to share love. And so here we are. And we get to be recipients of that. And we are one in God and God is in us. And that becomes now a very powerful place to be. And I think when you discover that, all kinds of opportunities open up. And that we do get to fall upward. I had an experience about a month ago. I was running a retreat up in northern British Columbia for the First Nations. And if I was to define the struggle for me over the last 10 years, it would be to refine the early passion that I had in my earlier years. Because the faith journey, in some ways, when it disintegrates, there's a loss of something in that. The ego loses that drive. And for me personally, it was really about refinding that passion. And I was doing this retreat. And at the end of the retreat, some of the people from the Nishka Nation where we were working, some of the young men came along and they gave me a First Nations name, which is very significant in their culture. And when they do that, they put their hand on your shoulder and they look you in the eye and they shout it at you. And it's kind of like, whoa. Okay. And it was really significant for me. And at the end of that experience with them, one of our team came up and said, "Tom, you were born to do this work." And it was just really cool to fall upward to that. When you feel like you've lost everything, and then you get this piece, and you go, "Okay, God, I'm perfectly loved," and you can rediscover that passion. You can rediscover a sense of who you are and what you're intended to do and what you're intended to be. And I get emotional about that because it's been a long journey to get there. It's not easy to fall upward. It's not easy to go through hell and back, you know, but it's worth it. And then you get to this really cool place. So we're going to open this for a conversation. So Jeff's going to come up and ask the first question. I don't know what's on your brain, but we'll just have this conversation because I think conversations around spirituality are really important. And I'm moving away from monologues to wanting to have conversations because I think a lot of you have things to add and valuable things to share together. So
you really was choked up there as you begin mm-hmm. talking.
Occupational hazard.
Yeah. Excited about this last journey, but you got me thinking as I was listening today. I was going to ask you about your own shadow side and what you've learned about, specifically about your shadow side. We mm-hmm. like to tell our stories a lot.
Yeah.
You started sharing a little bit about the enough piece. Is there more to that? Is there, just to help us understand what that, I don't know if in each of us we have a clear picture of what our shadow side can sound mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. and its traits and its ruts, and when it starts talking and being able to mm-hmm. identify it. How does it sound in your mind?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Jeff, for me, I think, is the goal of the shadow side is to stay invisible, mm-hmm. right? Is to stay mm-hmm. unconscious. So spirituality, in my understanding, is that when you can take that which is unconscious, right? And psychologists would say if you're unconscious, if your consciousness is the size of my fist, your unconscious would be the size of this room. So we've got a lot of unconscious stuff going on. Once you get it and you bring it out into consciousness, it's not about denying it or killing it. It's about recognizing that in God, that shadow or small self or, you know, ego, whatever, needs to be loved, right? It's really about embracing part of that. And I it's brilliant what Jung says, that it's insoluble. Some of these things, you're going to walk with that limp. It's always going to be part of that process in each one of us, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think there's layers and there's, you know, the place. I think that's why we're tricked into marriage, to be honest. I mean, for example, like, I didn't know I was a bad driver until I got married. Like, I thought it, I thought I was the world's best. How many guys here thought you were the world's best driver until you got married, right? And then God gives you this gift that you fall in love with, right? And it's, and then you, and then they go, that driving's inappropriate. Who knew?
I'm gonna preach it.
Who knew? You know, but so it's in relationship, in when we're in that loving relationship, that those things come out.
Yeah.
That the shadow is there. Yeah. If you're by yourself, in a sense, and, it, and it's not just marriage, but it's in any relationship, those relations, I need you to help me see me. Mm-hmm. I don't see me. Mm-hmm. Right? I need that accountability. I need your perspective on my life, and you need mine. And that's what relationship's about, that we have that sense that, I don't, what do we call them? We call them blind spots. Well, we have this phrase, ego is blind.
Sure.
Right? So your ego is blind, my ego is blind.
Sure.
So we've got the blind leading the blind here.
How old were you, Tom, though, when you began to realize the voice in your head is not Tom, but it is your ego? Voices at work that are telling you, talking to you, whatever. At what point did all of a sudden you recognize, wait a second, that is my dad's voice. That's coming from a different place. That's not me.
Oh, man.
Can I?
At some level, so it's a longer story, but at some level, it was when I was in drug rehab, when I was 20. And they used to have this thing, it was in the drug rehab I went through, they had this gestalt therapy, is what they used to use, reality therapy. And they put you on a chair session, is what it was called. And you sat on the chair, and the only rule to get off the chair, you couldn't eat, you couldn't sleep, you had an occasional bathroom break, and that was it. You couldn't smoke either, which was torment at that particular point, which is the only addiction I had left. And so I'm sitting on the chair, and the only rule to get off the chair was get honest. And so people would say, how do you feel? And I would go, I'm fine. And they go, how do you really feel? And I go, I'm really fine. And they go, how do you really, really feel? And I'm going, really, really fine. And I went on, and I was on the chair for like 9 hours, like all night. And it's like breakfast time. And I'm going, how do I get off this thing? And they go, get honest, you know. I just wanted breakfast, is what I really wanted. But it's like, you got to get honest. And a buddy of mine came in, and he knew me from the streets when we were dealing and stuff. And he came behind me, and he put his arms around me. And he says, how's it feel to be alone? In that moment, I understood, got honest about my feelings. First time in years that I had been emotional, been honest about it.
Wow.
So, I've been crying ever since, so, you know. It's
I could keep asking questions, but are there thoughts, questions, responses?
What are you thinking? Well, we do have an obligation. So in AA, they would say that you make amends to people except when to do so would injure them or others. So I think there's an obligation we have of repairing the past. And forgiveness is a huge piece of that. So let me give you an illustration. Part of what I've learned in working with First Nations, I said a comment very casually. One day I talked about some of the issues that have been created in First Nations because of the residential schools. And one of the survivors of the residential school said to me, he said, actually, all the issues that we have are because of the residential schools. So I've asked the question in these community events we run, how many people here have been influenced by residential schools? Everybody in the room puts their hand up, whether it's first generation as a survivor or the next generation of people that have been parented by the survivors. And I, as a white person, have an obligation to complete that. So part of what we do in the retreat, and we've done this a number of times, we've had residential survivors come and sit at the front of the room, and we've washed their feet. Because we need to complete that. We need to apologize. They need to forgive. We've got to break the cycle of insanity. And that, we had a lady, she said, I've had government officials, I've had all kinds of people apologize. She said, I'd never experienced it until that. Well, take a look at what the 10-year-old, what's the wound that the 10-year-old's dealing with, right? Because the wounded 10-year-old needs to let go. And forgive, the word to forgive in Greek means to let go of. So if there's somebody that's connected to that original wound, then it's about letting go and forgiving and completing it through the power of forgiveness. And that's where I think grace and love and our faith is so powerful, because Jesus shows us the way to forgive. And I think that that idea of letting go, you know, of the offense and letting go of the, and the pain then, and the stories and the tape, it takes time. And then you're able to embrace it and complete that piece. So there's a lot to that. I mean, I could teach a whole 4-day seminar on completion, but you know, in a way, it's really about that completing it piece.
So. You quoted someone earlier saying you can't solve that problem. You only grow out of some of these things. Yeah. And perhaps that's part of the ongoing journey. You were saying just the other day, you recognize the 7-year-old again. And how long have you known about the 7-year-old?
Exactly.
Right? And so we find ourselves, that's the beauty of even a morning like this, where you can stop and look at the patterns, and look at the voices, how we're steering our ship this past week and go, wait a second. It took me 7 days to get completely spun out. And I, oh, whoa, I'm listening to the 7-year-old again. Mm-hmm. And so it's that, I don't know. That's my thoughts is I need regular repetition in observing who's driving the ship right now. I got a shadow side. I got a side in me. It might not be a 7-year-old, but it's close to that. That's a people pleaser. And if I'm not listening, all of a sudden, it has me jumping to every little request people are throwing at me. And it's like... Mm-hmm. Sunday mornings have been a great stop for me.
Cool.
Any other thoughts on this? Any other questions before we wrap it up?
Yeah, that's a great comment. Fear sometimes stops us from engaging in that journey and moving forward. So the opposite of fear is not courage. The opposite of fear is love. So, you know, 1 John says that in perfect love there is no fear. And so that's why the premise or the starting point is that in God, when we're perfectly loved in God, that's our starting point. So there's no fear in that, because I can embark on that journey because I know that I am one with God and that God is with me on that. It's like that song. That was a brilliant song this morning. Just that God is with us in this journey. And knowing that gives me the courage because I'm loved. And it's not about performance. Right? It's not about doing it. Here's the good news. None of us in this room have done the journey towards maturity in a mature way. We're all very immature in how we've grown. Hello?
Yeah.
If we can just, I mean, let's see, the way towards authenticity is to be authentic about our inauthenticities. Right? Because you're all inauthentic. Right, and that's the piece. We just got to get honest about that. Just get honest about the fact that the way we grow is not particularly mature. Hello, like, would you welcome to the journey? Right, so it's okay. It's okay to be immature in some of the ways that we grow towards maturity, because when we're dealing with that little 7-year-old, the 7-year-old doesn't always behave itself very well, right? And you know, and yeah. Anyway.
Well, and being able to, I think you were talking about just not being able to have energy around that and be judgmental toward that 7-year-old that got a hold of the wheel,
right. But
accepting it. Hey, this is part of my normal. This is what's going on. And being able to kind of take the power from that thing and not feel so fixated in trying to fix it. These are great thoughts. You know what? I encourage you. Tom's going to be hanging out here if you have more thoughts. Feedback or whatever, by all means, feel free to come and yak with them. We're going to close off. Thank you, Tom,
Thanks. For
joining us this morning, sharing some of your journey with us. This is fantastic. Yeah. We're glad you're here this morning. If you're new, if you just stumbled in or someone dragged you out, and I would love to be able to meet you. And thank you for joining us. And next week, like I mentioned, Chad and Luke are going to come and we're going to just chat about their journey, their story, and some of the learning through it. It'll be fantastic as well. So glad you could make it out this morning. Have a great week. Get out there and stampede if that's your story. And if that's your thing. And if not, avoid it like the plague. Avoid it like the plague if it's not. Have a great week. We love you.